morning, good people. The Local Take presents Discourse, Dialogues for Understanding. This is the first in a series of conversations that we'll have with our community. We hosted a roundtable with the Community Council of Metro Atlanta last month, and we captured the voices of our young men. We're joined this morning by David Branch, community organizer and event facilitator. Welcome, David.
Good morning.
And also by Dr. Gary White, an adjunct professor at Clark Atlanta University. Welcome, Dr. White.
Good morning. Good morning.
This morning, more than anything, I want to share with you all the voices of the young men that participated in last month's event. We never actually get to hear the voices of these young men. They range in age from 19 to 31. So first, we talk to them about their feelings on the Zimmerman verdict and the Stand Your Ground laws in general. Let's listen to a few of the young men.
So when the Zimmerman verdict happened, it basically told me, it's okay to kill a black man, just as long as you can justify self-defense, regardless of what the evidence is. As a black man, you are to be a statistic. No, that's what that verdict meant to me. We wasted all that time negotiating, going over evidence, and yet he still walked. So I guess I was born the wrong race.
Justice is not blind. She wears a blindfold, but there's peepholes all in it. She sees color green. She sees color black. She's not blind at all. Now, I'm not going to try to deceive anyone to think that I expect to be treated equally when I walk in the courts, because I don't. But there's a saying that says when you have your hands in the lion's mouth, the last thing you want to do is slap it. And we as black men have to understand we walk around daily with our hand in the lion's mouth. Unfortunately, we also walk around with our pants hanging down and these other things that don't put us in the best of light. It doesn't necessarily attest to our character, but it does not shed the best light on us. So as long as we know what the enemy is and what they're capable of, we know we don't have equality, so we got to act accordingly.
The Zimmerman verdict was a little tricky because I already know how the laws apply. They're not in our favor. They are not to benefit us. So when he got off, it wasn't a surprise. I honestly do feel like him getting off was the best punishment because he can't live a normal life. He will never be able to go out in public and just enjoy himself in public just because of, you know, the publicity of it, how we feel about it. I do, however, feel like that our reaction to the case was meaningless and frivolous. It had no impact on the verdict. It had no impact on anything to do with anything. The way to make your voice heard in this day and age is to affect people's money. And when the verdict happened, people were out there buying Skittles and buying Arizona cans. And I know there was support of Trayvon Martin, a symbolic report, but you made so much money for Skittles in Arizona, and those aren't black-owned businesses. So that was crazy how a black boy can get, an African male can be murdered, and then the sales of a white-owned company can go up. Yeah, that's an oxymoron.
So that was Rick Rush, Artis Bronson, and Derek Standifer. So, David, when you hear these voices and when you hear kind of this passion and pain that these young men are in, what does that mean to you?
Well, to me, it just means that many of our young people, our young African-American men, are engaged with what's going on with the issues, and we're frustrated, you know, frustrated with just the injustice and the way that historically young black men and black men and black people in general have been treated. But if you listen to the rest of the dialogue, there's a lot of positive takeaways. But, you know, the Zimmerman verdict was really a wake-up call.
And Dr. White, what did you hear in listening to those voices?
I sat there saying wow to a great degree, because it had a lot to do with I'm listening to their responses, and I really like the last young man, because here was reality. No one in America was shocked by the result of the Zimmerman. I can't imagine. We responded once it happened, but no one, I can't imagine, if you really, really look at it, I can't imagine that it came to a level of shock, some degree of anticipation. So listening to these young men and accepting the reality for African-American males in general is that this is our history with the criminal justice system. And so our experience or what we witnessed there confirmed the history of the our experience with the criminal justice system. And that is why I say to a degree, as I listen to these young men, no one was can honestly, if you really process it, could have been shocked.
I think I was surprised, number one, that the young men were so passionate about what happened around the Zimmerman verdict, but also that these young men know and process the fact that they are not considered equal in our justice system.
Mm-hmm. That's and you hit right home, because that's what's being said and shared in this dialogue with these young men. We recognize that if you don't have representation, if you as well as considering all the myths and stereotypes associated with it, you know, a lot of people didn't realize that the moment this happened, Zimmerman appeared with a law: stand your ground. Mm-hmm. That was immediately. Not everyone walk around with laws in their pocket, and so what that's going to tell you is that he was well trained and well prepped in understanding the law, and that is why it becomes so critical for us as African American men, and particularly our Black male youth, to become versed in the laws. And that's what some of the work we do, even with Let Us Make Man, in terms of understanding and knowing your legal rights.
Absolutely.
Well, that actually brings us right into the next part of the questions that we were asking the young gentleman. Before I go there, I want to invite the listeners and community. You can call in and join this conversation this morning. The number is 404-880-9255. But Dr. White, you mentioned something about representatives and representation in the country. I mentioned to the young men about this time we find ourselves in, 150 years out from the Civil War, 50 years out from civil rights legislation. And it seems like we take, you know, steps forward and steps back. And in that Stand Your Ground laws, we've got Dream Defenders down in Florida, an organization directed by Black and brown youth who confront systematic inequality. They just got the legislature to say that they'll talk about changing the Stand Your Ground laws. But let's listen to what the gentleman felt about this time that they find themselves in, voting, where we are in our country. Let's listen to the gentleman again.
When you hear these stories in history and you read them about it in school and in the books, and then you see the same thing happening on the news hundreds of years later, it's like, that saying, time heals all wounds except for this wound. And when you think of everything that's happening, even, you know, people like to say President Obama was elected, but he was the only president that had to prove his identity, was scrutinized, and all of this stuff happened. And what does it mean for me? It's like they're taking this wound that time is supposed to heal, and they rip the scab off of it. Right at the point where it's almost healed, they rip the scab off of it, throw some salt in it, and say, stand up, act straight, this is who you are. It's disheartening. What motivates me to try to operate and thrive in a system that isn't really designed for my benefit?
If we were voting, if those people that are going in office were truly being placed there by us, because we've gone out and we've educated ourselves to the platforms, if we've educated ourselves to the issues, and we took time to go out and vote, a lot of this stuff would not happen. So it's one thing to scream and oh, they've taken this away, they've taken them. Have they really taken it away, or have we given it back? And I recently, in the past couple of years, had the opportunity to work on a campaign, and it's so disheartening when you realize that how uneducated we are as a people on the voting process. You can look at the runoff elections. We don't understand that a person five people can run for an election, and if one can have 49.9% of the votes, and the other person can have less than 10%, if they're the second, they're going to be a runoff election. And if we don't, go out and vote again, that 10% can win.
So many people will, you know, they'll sell out. You know, we get people who, it's called the black bourgeois. You'll get money, you'll leave the communities that you grew up in, and you will not go back and help the community that you grew up in. You know, we got people who will make it, and they support the Boys and Girls Club, but those aren't black organizations. Those aren't organizations prone to helping black youth, African youth. That's why we got all these problems, because our mentors aren't the college professors. Our mentors aren't the people who graduate and who come back and help us. Our mentors are rappers and entertainers and basketball players and football players. So if our kids see this, if that's all they see, even though this is only a small percentage of the population of the African people, this is all they see. So this is all they strive for. You ask a black boy, a black kid to name five people with degrees, they're gonna struggle. It's hard to find a black kid who can name five people with a college degree. But if you ask a black kid to name five entertainers, It's more, even though it's more black people with college degrees than there are entertainers, we have a hard time naming it the people with college degrees than we do the entertainers, because we caught up in this mindset of it is better to entertain ourselves and to entertain other people than to educate ourselves. You know, you can't entertain yourself more than you educate. That's one, we got too many people who know how to read but don't read. If you know how to read and don't read, that's the same thing as not knowing how to read. That means you're illiterate. You don't know how to read. You're illiterate if you don't read your books. I read a quote, 73% of people graduate high school and never read a book after that.
So those were the young gentlemen again. That was Rick Rush, mm-hmm. Artis Bronson, and Derek Standiford. And you're listening to The Local Take Presents Discourse, a dialogue for understanding. If you'd like to join the conversation, just call our studio now at 404-880-9255, and you can listen to this program later on WCLK.com. We're joined in the studio by David Branch, a facilitator with the Community Council of Metro Atlanta, and Dr. Gary White, who is with Let Us Make Man and also an adjunct professor here at Clark Atlanta University. And while I love these gentlemen and what they say, I do want to do a shout out to the Boys and Girls Club. They might not be black owned, but it's a good organization and they do good things in our community. But again, one of the things in listening to these young men, and I think all of us kind of take on the stereotype of what young black men are. And these young men, just a few minutes, they destroy those myths. These are smart young men. They're conscious.
Yeah.
They're good people. What did you think about what they had to say about voting and where we stand in this place and time? David Branch?
What I took away from it is a lot of these young guys want to be engaged and they want to see differences made and they want to see and make an impact in the community. And the trust and the faith in the voting system and the political system and the powers that be isn't really there anymore. And we're educated enough now, you know, after the civil rights movement, to be able to expound on how we feel, not be told how to feel. So with these young guys, you know, talking to them really, you know, I was really shocked and surprised to see how passionate they was, how much they cared about the issues. But I challenged them to take the next step, which is, where do you challenge that energy? And what do you do with that? Those feelings, because I am that stereotype kid. You know, I'm the ADHD kid. I'm the single parent home kid. I'm the kid that wasn't supposed to graduate. And I, at one time, was looked at, you know, as a young black man, hooligan, thug, whatever, and had to make the transition to being a participant of America and the American dream, which a lot of these young guys argue isn't for you, but I argue it is for you. You just have to find your way to participate.
Thank you, David Branch. And Dr. White, in listening to those voices express frustration about voting and, you know, time healing wounds, not really, what did you get out of that? What did you hear from that?
You're dealing with youth who are really overwhelmed by a system to a degree that does not love them. But it's a system that also understands that their existence is critical to the system. So that's what makes things particularly challenging. I challenge people because we talk and speak as if, you know, movements have started and ended. But I'm going to challenge and almost present a different paradigm shift to say that it's cyclical. And so there's a high time and then there's a low time. So we know about the civil rights movement, but you know, before the civil rights movement and, you know, A. Philip Randolph and some other folks was doing some serious work as well. And then it went down and then it picked up again. And I believe that this generation who are left with the question of how do I engage? Mm-hmm. It's not a question of should they engage, but how do I engage? And we know that it's something it's live and vibrant. And that's why I like the work that the Shunk Brothers doing as a community activist, because that's the work that we have to do to help redirect that energy, assist them in knowing how to engage and understanding that process, even within the voting process. And I love what the other brother said, it starts with reading. Mm-hmm. and picking up the book or the ebook or whatever, but it starts at that standpoint.
It does. And we've got a listener calling in, Ed in Stone Mountain. Thanks for joining our conversation.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning.
Peace and love to everybody.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning. Boy, just God help us get our freedom as black people. And I think the discussion that what you're saying about us getting our freedom and power, I've been working in the freedom movement since the early 70s from Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
We had first black mayor, Carl Stokes.
And what's your question, Ed?
And, okay, so...
Ed, we lost you. Sorry about that. Please call back in. We do want to hear you guys in the community. But more than anything, I want to share some more voices from these young men. And again, we live in a culture where everyone's talking about them, talking to them, you know, lecturing them, and we never really get to hear from them. One of the thoughts that was pervasive with these young men is that they're judged by everyone. They're judged by everyone. And I want us to listen again to some of these voices and hear what they feel when they get judged. Again, most of the time, these judgments are wrong. You know, these young men were thoughtful, conscious, and actually a little deep. Let's listen.
Like, you know, even with me right now, I wear locks. And right now I got my locks pulled back because, you know, I had to go to a job where the job said that, hey, you know, you're perfect. We like you. You know, you're great. But the only thing is our policy don't want you to have this exotic hairstyle. And so, you know, what that does for me is, okay, well, you know, I can't wear my locks. You said I'm going to have to cut my hair because, you know, it doesn't fit. And, you know, your reason why saying that is because of the stereotypes that they say, you know, when you're dealing with people internationally, they want to have a professional look. So you're saying that this is not professional if I have it neatly twisted and pulled back out of my face where you can see me. And pretty much what they say is that, because, you know, the stereotypes that's been placed on in society that, you know, it looks kind of, you know, gangsterish and stuff. When I'm like, well, we can't have our people thinking like that. Maybe if I wear my locks and I address people in a loving manner, then they'll say, oh, this is something different. I didn't expect this from this young man. And pretty much, you know, it hurts to have to, you know, go through that type of, you know, discrimination because you're trying to work and you got needs that you need to get taken care of as well. But on that same note, I feel like, you know, they need to understand that, you know, this is who we are. And we're not going anywhere. And my skin color is going to remain black, brown, the color that it is. And my hair is going to remain thick and coarse the way it is because that's the way that God created me. So I just feel like, you know, once people stop, you know, judging from what's on the outside and start to look at the character of people and look deeper at a deeper level at their spirit and their soul, I feel like people will understand and accept this better. And it'll make me feel better, you know, about the whole situation, because that's one thing that I just dislike with a passion. So
So many people will, you know, they'll sell out, you know, we get people who, it's called the black bourgeois. You'll get money, you'll leave the communities that you grew up in, and you will not go back and help the communities that you grew up in. You know, we got people who will make it and they support the Boys and Girls Club, but those aren't, in order to save ourselves, we need to learn how to take the education and apply it to situations that liberate us and take us out of slavery. I was listening to Amos Wilson this morning about the Skinner box, and he was talking about the rat and how they use certain behaviors to manipulate the rat. And we have to understand that we are the rat, and our communities is that box, and they implement stuff, and depending on how we react to it, that's the desired behavior that they get from what they gave us. So that's how we act.
I personally stood before a judge, first time ever in trouble. I had 21 counts of insufficient fund checks, not forgery, not stolen checks, not any of that. My checks had bounced, and I was wrong. And although I had no prior record, I got sentenced to over 15 years in prison. And I did a total of 62 months in prison for bad checks. And again, I say not forgery, not stolen checks. There were checks that bounced. They were misdemeanors, but he gave me a year for each check. That reminded me of, I don't care what your educational level is. I don't care any of this other stuff. You are still a black man. But it was a blessing in disguise, because I realized now that what that judge saw wasn't me. She saw something in me she was trying to kill. And I ended up getting a full scholarship to college from prison. And I'm currently a law student. I took the lemons that were given to me. And during those prison stints, I worked them in my hands out of frustration. Eventually, that became lemonade. That work of frustration, of working my hands back and forth, created a thirst. Until I finally took a drink of that lemonade and said, I'm picking myself up. And I'm not going to let yesterday stop me. So now I embrace where I've been. Not that I'm proud of it, but I think had it not happened, I would have thought I got away with something. And who knows where I would be right now. And I'm on a mission, a personal mission, of spreading that type of one. If it can happen to me, it can happen to you. Because I didn't come from a broken home. I was addicted to stupid. I wasn't addicted to drugs or alcohol. I was addicted to stupid, because it was stupid what I did and unnecessary. It was greed and shortcut taking. I was addicted to that. And I had to cleanse myself of it. And I've committed my life now to telling young men and women and anyone else that will listen, don't do it. Jail is a real possibility. I don't care what someone tells you about first offender. First offender to some is a setup if you don't have your mind right. But if you do fall, don't give up on you. Pick yourself up, brush yourself off, learn from it, and move on.
You're listening to The Local Take Presents Discourse, a dialogue for understanding. We just heard from Jabias McLester, Derek Standiford, and Artis Bronson. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call our studio now, especially if you're a young African-American man. We want to hear from you. The number is 404-880-9255. We're joined in the studio this morning by David Branch, a community organizer and facilitator for the Community Council of Metro Atlanta, and by Dr. Gary White from the organization Let's Make Mand, and also an adjunct professor here at Clark Atlanta University. So listening to the gentleman, Jabias McLester talked about having dreadlocks in the workplace and what that meant. Derek Standiford talked about Amos Wilson and the scatterbox. I mean, how deep is that? And then artist Bronson talked about being judged when he stood before a judge, you know, writing bad checks with a college scholarship and still ended up going to jail. Dr. White, let's start with you. What did those voices, what did that mean to you?
I absolutely loved all three. I think it was a home run. First, dealing with the images and stereotypes. You know, we're at war. Yeah, I have degrees, but there was a time I didn't have degrees. I was no different than any other young man before those degrees. And we're at war in terms of the stereotypes. Now, the media, entertainment, musicians, athletes, they have a greater exposure than those of us who have degrees or getting our education or getting our grind on in that way. And so it doesn't come as a shock that that our youth tend to look at those. They become preoccupied with the television. And so that becomes what we believe to be a reality. I really love that last young man, his discussion about being addicted to stupid. I have to challenge our young black men and understand that when we engage in things that give the judge or the system the opportunity to judge, then that's what the system is going to do. And here's what I understand more than anything. The criminal justice system, as well as many institutions, have studied the behavior. Mm-hmm. And our behavior to a degree that it is predictable. It is so predictable that we can build prisons and alternative schools based off of our predicted behavior. Our challenge is that when we know what the logical outcome is of some of our behavior, then we're met with the challenge to counter it. Now, on the other hand, these institutions like the criminal justice system, the school system, it too is also predictable. So this is where that win and where I enter part of a movement takes place, where we have to fight for financial aid and fight for other opportunities for our youth to properly engage the system. Because our behavior is predictable and the institutional systems are predictable, that means we know that. So we should better equip ourselves to respond to it.
And David, before we go to you, we have T. Praise in Atlanta on the line. T. Praise, welcome to the conversation. Good morning.
Peace and blessings. I just wanted to chime in and just state that my comment is that when I was coming up, you know, I'm 29 years old and I'm an artist. I'm a gospel artist, and I'm not only an artist, I'm a teacher and I'm a lecturer on African American studies and more studies. And I've understood, just from me coming up, understanding that when somebody told me knowledge was power, I didn't really understand that until I got older and started studying and reading. Because being out in the street, you don't study, you don't read. It's all about the hustle. However, when you get to a certain point, when you do go to jail, when you do have friends and family that's going to jail, you want to know a little bit more about law. You want to know a little bit more about what society, about what government thinks about you. And the government our society has programmed our people in such a way that we look at ourselves as being nothing. By law, when we stop calling ourselves black, Negro, or color, by law, when we understand law and how the system is set up for us to fail, we have to start looking at law and start knowing law and start knowing who we are.
Thank you for that, T. Praise. And it's funny, your comment is going to lead us into the next session for the young men.